bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome in to the NFL Week 5 Monday night edition of the Bet the Board podcast, powered by Bet Online. And before we get down to business, I'd like to wish everyone a happy Columbus Day, and more importantly, our loyal listeners to the North celebrating Thanksgiving, highlighted by a CFL clash between Toronto and Montreal. And Payne, we're nearly through Week 5. You holding up over there at the third of the season mark, or you sleeping until 10:30, 11 o'clock, exhausted, you know, trying to figure out ways to build up that stamina as we start to get into, you know, money-making season, so to speak?
CFL football, way to break that one out. I think all our listeners will enjoy that, and we are surviving. That is the key right now, heading into Week 6. All things going pretty well. Been a grind this season, so that wears on you a little bit.
Hey, try and get a little wind in your sails. Find that run for 4 to 5 weeks that makes all the hard work really pay off. And Payne, don't worry, we won't do a full breakdown of the Argos and Alouettes game. I mean, CFL definitely goes on the back burner about week 8 or 9. But as we do each and every Monday morning here, our tradition, whatever we want to call it, let's start with the good, the bad, and the ugly from the week that was in the National Football League. And I'm going to let you lead, Payne, with a glass half full, a player, a team, or something that really impressed you.
Josh McCown, baby. Dude has thrown for nearly 1,200 yards and completed 68% of his passes the last 3 weeks. I think the easy choice this week are the Cleveland Browns. Showed some resiliency late, really battled back. I didn't get invested there because I didn't get a normal price 7. Halftime, you could have achieved that number, and that was a good bet, second half plus 2 there with the Browns. So that was by far the most impressive team for me this week.
I'm going to play devil's advocate and say, were you as much impressed with the Browns as you were disappointed with that Ravens defense surrendering yet another lead in the fourth quarter? They just seem to be unable to cover anybody in that secondary.
I mean, I think we know what the Ravens are at this point. I mean, they're just decimated with injuries.
Yeah, bad football team.
They're beat up. I think that's the biggest key here. But the Browns really showed some life. This is a Browns team that we don't come to expect to win games like this, and they did. And we don't expect Josh McCown to win games like this, and he did. He pulled it out. So I think you definitely have to give the Browns some kudos this week.
Yeah, first time since 2007 they go into Baltimore and get the win. Not a win that I think Cleveland would be able to pick up before the season started, starting to put my Cleveland Browns win total under 6. And a little bit of life support, would have liked Baltimore to hang on there, but was not the case. For me, Payne, a team that impressed me, and we've been as critical of this side all season long as just about anybody in the NFL, the Eagles finally show some offensive firepower. I know it was 2 red zone interceptions or interceptions in the end zone from Sam Bradford, but the Eagles were able to overcome those, have a 34-19 first down advantage, back up 500 yards of offense, and really put a hurting on the Saints. I know the Saints aren't going to remind anybody of the 85 Bears defensively, but was this a confidence builder that the Eagles needed, especially with a huge Monday Night Football game coming up this week with the division-leading New York Giants?
Yeah, this was a big week for them. They got the offense going, struggled a little bit early, but Bradford got in rhythm. They were able to get DeMarco Murray even going a little bit. I think Chip Kelly, the GM's ego, still a little, you got to get your other running backs going. I think Murray's a lost cause. I really do at this point. I don't think he's going to be as consistent. But definitely a confidence builder, and I think the key here is Sam Bradford. We know he doesn't bring that element of his legs into the fold, so he is going to have to be accurate. They're going to have to rely on him to pass the ball downfield, show that he can incorporate that element into his game so the box is not getting clogged, and that was a key. He put it on tape last week that he could go deep in the Washington game, and New Orleans had to game plan for that a little bit, and so there wasn't as many guys stuffed in the box this week, and I think that allowed the run game to get going as well.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if we're going to see continued improvement from Bradford. I mean, how quickly we forget that he had nearly two seasons without game action. And while we think you're going to be able to adjust after just 3 or 4 weeks, he seems to be getting a little bit more command. But I couldn't agree more talking about how Darren Sproles and even Ryan Matthews make this offense much more dynamic out there. You look at Matthews averaging 9 yards a carry in the win yesterday, Sproles catching the ball out of the backfield, and you can stay married to DeMarco Murray for so long. Just seems to be a step slow, and that wear and tear he took last season in Dallas clearly having an impact on his production so far. Another team or performance pain that really impressed you from yesterday's action?
I think this is the obvious choice. It's the Bengals. Very resilient. There was no panic there. And it came from all phases. You get a great punt return from Pac-Man Jones. That kind of ignited the fire. The defense holds Seattle to 3 first downs the final 6 drives. They run right at Seattle with Bernard to get the offense going in the fourth. I think the only questions moving forward with the Bengals are, can the offense keep this up with the winter months? You're not getting any significant contributions from Hill. We know where the division is located. We know where they're going to play. It appears they're going to host some playoff games. Can you chuck it around the park in that kind of weather? And that's going to be the only question mark to see if this Cincinnati team can sustain what they're doing offensively.
Sam, you have any thoughts on the Seattle-Cincinnati game?
Nope.
You sure?
I got nothing.
All right, I wanted to give you a chance to weigh in, but apparently the cats got your tongue early in the morning, and I understand completely. We'll get to that situation a little bit later. Another player pain that really impressed me, and I know we joked about his quotes leading up to the game, Charles Woodson catching himself mid-interview, saying he'd really like to get his hands on Peyton Manning's balls. Well, he did. He got his hands on both balls yesterday with 2 interceptions, 2 players, really a throwback, and they've defied father time. 18 years in the NFL, didn't realize that they've both been going at it for so long. I know it came in a losing effort, but Oakland's defense, nothing short of outstanding in the way they were able to hold Denver at bay. It wasn't until the Broncos busted off a pick six that allowed them to get the cover, and maybe even the win, had Sebastian Janikowski not missed 2 field goals inside of 40 yards.
You know, they played bend but don't break. They did a good job against the run, which, you know, not overly surprising when you're talking about this Broncos run game. They did allow some pretty significant chunks of yardage down the field with Manning. It was really the first game that he's been able to take some shots down the field. So it's more bend but don't break. I'm not ready to fall in love yet with the secondary of the Raiders. They're still one of the most porous units in all of the NFL. But anytime you can hold Denver's offense basically scoreless, didn't reach the end zone a single time. So that's tough for a lot of bettors who didn't get the best number there and didn't cover a game where the opposing team didn't score an offensive touchdown.
And again, the Broncos offense, 31st in the league in terms of yards per play production. Thankfully for them, they can lean on a defense that may be the best unit, stop unit in the entire league. So Denver doing things a little bit differently. That under train continues to stay on the tracks despite taking some pretty sharp money on the over yesterday from respected betting groups out there. For me, Payne, 2 guys that kind of impressed me, 1 in a winning effort, 1 in a losing effort in the same game. Eli Manning makes a poor decision at the end of the half when the Giants really have a chance to step on the throat of the 49ers, but then comes back, marches the team the length of the field facing a 27-23 deficit, 41-54, showing why the Giants gave him that huge paycheck, spreading the ball around to a number of receivers. And even in the losing effort, I think, you know, that was the best we've seen of Colin Kaepernick over the past couple weeks. A little bit surprised he didn't run the football with his legs nearly as much as I anticipated, but throwing the ball was able to stretch the field a bit, and maybe a confidence builder for a quarterback that a lot of us had kind of thrown under the bus for the way he'd struggled against the Packers, against the Steelers, and against the Cardinals in some pretty ugly losses for those San Francisco boys.
Yeah, no complaints there. I think when you looked at the game plan and you looked at San Francisco's secondary with some injuries and just how they've performed over the last few weeks, you're going to have to rely on Eli Manning. And in general, I think when you pay a guy that much money, you're going to have to rely on Eli Manning with his 2 Super Bowls. It was a great come-from-behind victory. I'm not sure how it got to that point. I mean, we know San Francisco is the sharp side. We talked about it on the podcast. We talked about a price point to purchase, and there were 7.5s available there. So hopefully our listeners got some covers there. But Eli Manning was able to kind of take his shots, and a couple of his wide receivers got dinged up late. So it was definitely an impressive performance. Most completions by him, I believe, in his career. So good things to see there. Kaepernick, you definitely have to be encouraged by the effort, but this will be interesting to see because their best two performances have been on national TV in these primetime games. Let's see how they perform when not as many people are watching in just a standard game. We know players are definitely showing their best on national TV. There's not going to be much quit unless you're referring to the Dolphins in London.
Well, we'll see exactly what San Francisco is made of next week when they play host to the Baltimore Ravens. If they can't move the ball through the air in that game, I'm not really sure what to say. And Payne, one thing I want to kind of build on it before we get to the glass half empty performances of guys that really disappointed. You mentioned how we talked about on Thursday's podcast that San Francisco was going to be the side. I had a few people ask me on Twitter, oh, is this, you know, sharp steam coming in on the Giants laying 7.5? You know, what do you expect from the market? But I think that's why this podcast, not to pat ourselves on the back, becomes such a valuable tool for the recreational bettors that don't have the same access to the information. They don't know when to enter the market. They don't know where these numbers are going to go. And when we say these things, it's not to hear ourselves speak more often than not, that we know these numbers are going to tick out. And with so much funny business taking place these days in the betting market, you have to know who's behind the line moves, what's the driver, and exactly what the end goal was. And I think that was a prime example. Early on Sunday, that line goes from 7 to 7.5, and it sets up perfectly for the pros that knew they were going to be on the dog. They just wanted the market to sit there at that key number for them.
Yeah, yeah. We definitely saw some professional money touch the Giants a little bit to get the momentum going, knowing it was the Sunday night game, and the public would be sure to back the Giants as well. And once that momentum gets going, this is, again, the one sport, the one betting market that really allows public bettors to have a say. And in this Sunday night bailout game, it's going to be tough to come off that number of 7.5, even if there is sharp money. We did see this right before kickoff come down to 7 at a few places. And again, that was significant professional money on the San Francisco 49ers. You get more than a possession. That 7 is the second largest key number. So anytime you can navigate around these key numbers and get that extra value, it's just a huge, huge position. And it really doesn't take, there's just so much respect given to these professional bettors where a small bet can really get this thing going. And that's what we saw with this game on Sunday night.
And you mentioned the respect given to professionals. It's actually a piece that I've been writing that'll be available on Todd's Take either later this week or early next, talking about the myth of sharp money and exactly what it means. I think a lot of people get confused when they go, oh, well, the pros are opposite the public. That means liability should be evened out. Not the case at all. If you have public bettors moving 5 to 10,000 that are larger whales, and those bets continue to build up, whereas a nickel or a dime or maybe a little bit more can move the line in the other direction for that respect, as the books would like to put themselves on the side of sharp money. Payne, disappointments of the weekend, and I have a laundry list of them. I'm going to start in the state of Missouri, and I'm going to pick the team that hails from the western side of the state. I'm sure you can take the guys in the east. Kansas City, 17-3 lead at halftime against the Chicago Bears, and Andy Reid looked like all he wanted to do was start taking knees to run the clock out against the unit formerly known as the Monsters in the Midway. How you squander that type of opportunity to get in the win column, forget the fact that they didn't cover the 9, but to lose that game outright to a Chicago team who should have been dead and buried, mind-boggling to me. Jamal Charles' status, you know, relevant or not.
Yeah, that's one of the teams that I have my disappointment list. 3 yards per play after Jamal Charles goes down with what looks like a season-ending ACL injury. The offense became extremely conservative, and you really focus in on that last drive where you're up 17-12. It was basically just hilarious on all fronts. 3 minutes to go. It's the end of the game. You're paying Alex Smith $68 million, and you ram the ball into the middle of the line of scrimmage with a guy who's third on your depth chart. So that was pretty much mind-boggling to me as well. The defense couldn't hold. We've seen some issues from this defense. They played well early in this game, but once kind of the pressure was on them, they couldn't get stops on either of the final drives. So the Chiefs were definitely far and away the most disappointing team this weekend, in my opinion.
More disappointing than the St. Louis Rams and Nick Foles' performance?
That was completely on Foles for me. I thought the team played well. The defense played well. You get 2 interceptions. On Rodgers, you only allow 14 offensive points. How the Rams did not cover that game is beyond me. Foles goes 11 for 30. And basically, it's just the poor decision-making. You throw two picks, basically the end zone. And then the picks at midfield are just inexcusable. It's third and long. You're at midfield. There's nothing wrong with taking a sack there. These guys have been programmed to get rid of the ball. A sack is not bad in that situation. You take the sack, you punt and pin the opponent. Instead, you get them basically field position at midfield, and it really, really ruins that game. So Rams were clear-cut to me the right side if Nick Foles doesn't have a hiccup there.
Not going to disagree, and we use Packers again. You finally get Aaron Rodgers to throw two interceptions, and they still find a way to win by 14 and get to the window. Greg Zuerlein wasn't exactly doing any favors for Rams backers. I know, as you mentioned to me yesterday, a little bit more of a sobering reality when you're kicking outside in the elements than in the climate-controlled environment of a dome. Now, a climate-controlled environment of a dome clearly didn't help the Detroit Lions. Six turnovers, yards per play for Arizona, 7.7 to 4.9. The Lions did run 44 more plays and had 29 first downs, the Cardinals 15. But, man, this Lions team really looks like a dumpster fire. They haven't shown any improvement. We knew the spot was going to be tough. There were some injury concerns. But they just look like they would rather be doing anything else under the sun than playing big boy football.
Tough spot. That's the first thing. The cross-country travel in a short week after basically getting your heart ripped out on Monday Night Football, we knew it was going to be a tough spot. It's very rare that we see such a significant move like that from professional bettors laying 2.5, not really caring what the public's going to do, even though it was about 80-20 split there on the bet tickets. Now, the interesting part is you're kind of ingrained as a professional bettor to pick off numbers, and any time you can lay 2.5 and take 4.5, it's a good strategy. But I think when you do that with the Detroit Lions, that goes out the window. So that game wasn't close. Jim Caldwell, he's got to go. He's not very good. Matthew Stafford continues to regress. Last year we did see some improvement from him, only 12 interceptions. He's already got 8 at this point in the season. We saw what they were doing in the preseason. It looked like the offense was going to start humming. They need to get more out of the ground game. Ameer Abdullah, we saw what he was in college. Very, very big talent, but can he hold on to the ball? I know it was like a turnover or a fumble every 40 touches in college. So that seems to be a problem as well. He was benched this week. I think if we're ever going to see an effort, I know it's a game we're going to talk about in a little bit, but if ever there was this last-ditch effort from Detroit, it would likely be this coming week.
Oh, it's definitely a game on the radar for the upcoming weekend as we get into look-ahead lines, as we always do on the Monday edition of the Bet the Board podcast. But, Payne, any other teams that really disappointed you or let you down over the weekend?
I think it's got to be Seattle, you know. This would have been the type of win that made me a believer out of Seattle. You're now 2-3 with the gift-wrapped win on Monday Night Football. You blow a 17-point lead with 13 minutes ago, and you have that big defense.
Payne, Sam, you want to weigh in on this yet? All right, Payne, continue.
That's it. The three-team money line parlay goes down in a blaze of glory. This seems to be becoming a trend. You blow a fourth-quarter lead in the Super Bowl. You blow a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter to open the season at St. Louis. You have a fourth-quarter lead at Lambeau Field, and you blow that. And the Lions dominated you in your home building in the fourth quarter on Monday Night Football, but the league helped you out. You get a fantastic day out of an unknown, basically, in Thomas Rawls. And this was an interesting note someone sent me. Rawls actually had more yards in Sunday's game than Marshawn Lynch has ever had in a single game. And you blow it. You look around this team. You hate to put it on Daryl Bevel, but how can you not utilize Jimmy Graham in this struggling offense? Basically, the Seahawks essentially purchased a Ferrari, and they're driving it around in the winter in Alaska. He is just – they don't use him. It's just mind-boggling. You don't have an offensive line. Get the guy over the middle of the field. Create short passes. It's the offense in Daryl Bevel has just been a complete head-scratcher so far. And he couldn't utilize Percy Harvin last year either. So – a lot of question marks with Daryl Bevel.
Well, we know that Central Michigan apparently produces studs when you're talking about at the NFL level. Antonio Brown, Thomas Rawls. It's quickly becoming a factory for skill position players. I love the analogy with the Ferrari during the winter in Alaska. I'm not really sure how it would drive during the summer in Alaska either. I've never been up there myself. But you make great points talking about some of the struggles that Seattle has had trying to find an offensive identity, and more troubling, the defense just hasn't been able to protect those leads in late situations. A team now that sits at 2-3, and we've mentioned it a number of times that we suggested under their win total at 12 looked to be a pretty healthy bet. And I think barring some improbable win streak, that'll most likely be a winner. But Payne, to wrap this kind of piece up, I'm going to go disappointment, and it's going to be a much larger scale and scope, and it's going to be an indictment of the industry. I think yesterday afternoon, and we'll have Dave Mason on Thursday for the Bet the Board podcast like we always do to talk about how the house performed, the big winners and losers, etc. But when you look at the afternoon slate, you had three road favorites come in. We knew full well that the Patriots-Cowboys game, we were going to see 85 to 90% coming in on the road favorite. No matter what you made that line, you could have gone to 10. It was still going to continue that way. You saw some sharp steam come into the market, although I contend, I'm not sure how sharp it really was, running a step in front of the Patriots with Brandon Whedon. But that number sits around 7.5, 8. You continue to let the public lay that number, and I don't care if you operate a shop here in Vegas or if you do it somewhere in the islands or the UK, you have to know these betting trends and how the market is going to move. The Lions, a little bit of a different situation. Open 2.5, number got to 4.5, never saw that resistance that was anticipated. But the game that I don't understand what the industry was doing, and I'll continue, you know, to question it from the start, the Denver Broncos. That game ends up closing 6. It comes in with public steam about 10 minutes before kickoff. But why is that game not opening at 6.5, baiting people? The betting public isn't price sensitive. They're not going to come off of it. You know you're going to get money from the professionals, so start moving it around. I'm sick of these sob stories about how bad some of these weekends have been for the house when you're not making an attractive enough proposition to get sharp money or to deter the public from betting these very high-profile teams with the name brands that they recommend. I just don't understand it, and it's one of the things that used to drive me nuts when I was behind the counter myself, that you can't go out. The guy shop down the street's hanging the same number. We have to mirror this, and then you're crying on Sunday night about, you know, how shit didn't work out the way it was supposed to.
I think we're pretty open on last week's podcast that 7 on the Patriots was just a horrific open. I think you open it 7.5, 8, see where the market takes you. Clearly, there was significant sharp money on the Cowboys at 10, so they have to react to that, but going all the way back down to 7.5, where you could allow players to potentially buy that and lay 7. It just wasn't a very, very wise business decision. In terms of the Raiders game, you can't really go nuts with your numbers. That's kind of the one thing here. But all week we saw it. There wasn't a ton of movement. Opened in that 5, 5.5 range, went down to 4.5, which, you know, kind of some dead numbers in there at 5. And it really didn't go as low as I thought it would. I really thought this game had an opportunity to get to 3.5 with who was on this game. We know a lot of the professionals went first half +3. That ticket cashed with ease. Depending on the number you got full game, you know, a little different situation. But I think the Raiders were the clear-cut right side here. So I'm not going to beat them up too much, but you're right, it did close 6. You probably could have kept it at 6 virtually all week and received kind of the same two-way action.
Yeah, and we're going to see a very similar scenario unfolding this week. New England on their revenge tour, a 7.5-point favorite against Indianapolis. And, oh, wait, Andrew Luck hasn't seen game action in nearly 2-plus weeks. We know the Colts were the ones who exposed the Patriots for Deflategate. Good luck trying to get dog action here on Indianapolis at this particular price. And, you know, it's a game that we'll cover in greater detail on Thursday, but it's just driven me nuts as we've seen the public have an absolute field day over the first 5 days. And to their credit, hey, they're betting the better football teams and they're getting to the window because books haven't adjusted. I did feel the Rams-Packers line finally reflected that. You had a chance to bet a competent team over a touchdown in Lambeau Field. Now, of course, we know the Rams didn't get the cash, but as you mentioned, clearly the right side in that spot. And one other side note, we talk about first halves and some of the derivative markets all the time on this podcast. A little bit surprised by the industry trend. Years ago, we used to see halftimes for totals and sides coming up on Wednesday for the NFL. This year, we're waiting till Saturday afternoons. And I'm not sure if it's a collective effort, if it's a prisoner's dilemma. One shop doesn't want to go and have the other copy it. But it's really a troubling trend that we've seen from the industry on the collective side.
Yeah, it's certainly hurting us. There's no question about that. When we look at some of the things that we did on Saturday, where we really like to split our bets, sometimes the number's gone. I know a perfect example was the USF game, where that game total was as high as 49.5. Some guys obviously took that, but by the time the halftime number, the first half number opened, you're looking at 23, 22.5. You couldn't get that 24 because the full game market had already adjusted. So definitely left us on the sidelines. When it comes to these numbers, though, I think they know, and we know, obviously, I would say 90% of the action that are coming in on these first half lines are from professional money. And we also know the market's just a much different place. There's only, I would say, three or four places at the very most. I would say two or three places that are originating these numbers, and everyone else is just copying. And that's kind of what we've become as an industry. You get sports books that won't even take a bet in general and move their number. They're basically just moving on air. Pinnacle took a bet, so we're going to move our number. So that's kind of the place that we're at right now with books just moving on air.
Well, that was a running joke when I was at Caesars that we could take a massive bet from a customer we respected, but unless MGM took the same bet and moved on the screen, we were not going to move the number at Caesars because of managerial policy. There's a reason clearly that I'm not working for that shop and I'm doing these kind of endeavors. I should say you mentioned the college football numbers. Bet Online, home to college football's first openers. Yes, there are lower limits available, but they're numbers that a lot of the professionals and the public try and get in and take advantage of, having a chance to bet into some of those virgin prices. So I would encourage folks that aren't already account holders over there to take advantage of some of those generous Bet the Board discount packages that are available. But soapbox over. We'll get down to business. Payne, for those folks not following you on Twitter, I'm not sure why I'm doing it already, can find Payne at Payne Insider. You can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. And, of course, subscribe to this podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes, or visit us at toddstake.com. Payne, look ahead lines. Not a ton of massive movement. You kind of created the tease with the Detroit Lions. We may as well start there. The Lions listed at 6.5-point chalk on the Westgate look ahead. Now, lo and behold, we look at the market. Bet Online hanging the Lions minus 2.5, minus a quarter, total of 45. Still some major injury concerns for the Bears. We know that there's no quarterback controversy allegedly in Detroit, but the Lions in a prime buy low potential opportunity.
Jim Caldwell with the baseball reference. He must be a huge playoff MLB fan, so I'm not really sure where that's going. You would think, of all spots, this would be the spot for Detroit. Clearly, from a line value perspective, you get Detroit that just gets blown out. Chicago sneaks in the back door, gets the outright win there. This was 6.5 last week, and now you're talking 2.5 through the crucial key number of 3. For me, I think Stafford and Amir Abdullah and company kind of get things going. Detroit will probably get some pieces back on defense. We'll look at the Haloti Ngata injury and see where that's at. Levy gets his feet wet this week, so we'll see what happens there. So some two key position guys coming back, and I think probably Detroit's going to be the side here, especially at under a field goal.
Another game that we saw the market adjust to 1 week's worth of performances, and of course we'll cover it in greater detail on Thursday. Falcons Saints, you're looking at the Falcons right now, a 3-point favorite minus $1.20 at Bet Online. Look ahead number here, under the key number of a field goal. You know, what do we make of the Saints? We know the defense is terrible. The Falcons, they weren't that impressive offensively against the Washington Redskins, but I did think defensively they were pretty stout, especially against the run game.
Front seven for New Orleans is just horrific. They did get some pieces back in the secondary with Jerry's Bird and Lewis are back. So those are key things there. This is kind of a last-ditch effort for New Orleans. You'd think they'd probably show up in the standalone game at home. Atlanta's defense, you know, they're doing okay. It's definitely a different kind of mind frame. The numbers and statistics still aren't great. They're letting up some yards, but, you know, they're swarming to the ball. They're turning people over. So that's going to be the key for this game, obviously. And not to give too much away, we'll talk about this on the Thursday podcast.
Yep, I think come Thursday when we break this game down in greater detail, we'll have some of our answers to questions regarding health for key contributors on the Atlanta offense as well. We mentioned Seattle and their disappointing effort and inability to close out the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, they were listed as a 7.5-point favorite on a look-ahead number against the Carolina Panthers. We actually saw the market open 5.5 here. Seattle immediately took money. Current number there, 6.5 for the Seahawks at BetOnline.
Yeah. I'm not a big Carolina guy, but 7.5 with a total that low in a revenge spot seems not like a bad bet, so they opened it under that key number. It'll be interesting to see how real that move out to 7 is. So it'll be interesting. I will be monitoring this. We know Seattle's offensive line woes. dead last in protection efficiency, and that's likely with the most mobile quarterback. We know Carolina's defense will have something for them. So this will be something we definitely break down. Not sure how long sevens last here.
And I don't want to go into full-blown tilt. We mentioned the Patriots game earlier. Look ahead line for that one against the Colts, 5.5. New England now a 7.5-point chalk on the road. Standalone game, I'm going to venture that you're going to see at least 80% of the public coming in on the Patriots. We'll, of course, touch on this game with a lot more specifics, as we always do for those primetime games. But, Payne, the one feature that people have tuned in on Mondays for, you know, they don't come here for winners. They don't come here to figure out all the time where the market's moving. You know, they want to know what we think about our recreational pursuits. And I felt like we found a good movie to try and talk about in Sicario. I went last night. You know, I neglected my responsibilities during the week. But a movie that I thought was pretty solid and definitely worth a watch for our loyal Bet the Board listeners.
I think this segment needs to give you your proper dues. You said it. Your unrelenting dedication to Bet the Board podcast. You missed Sunday Night Football to go see this so we could talk about it today. And you mentioned your Kardashian-like midweek activities.
Hold on. Before you throw me under the bus for that, I will say that I missed the Sunday Night Football game in real time. I did DVR it and was able to watch the entire second half. Couldn't neglect those responsibilities, but did have to do my due diligence so we could provide this entertainment value for a lot of our folks that may be stuck at their desk on a Monday afternoon.
Talk to us about Todd's Takes New York. Let's fill us in on that.
Was out in the city last week, and you know, you couldn't neglect the podcast there either. It was a little bit tricky trying to finagle around the hotel room, taking advantage of a landline, banish the thoughts. You know, couldn't sit on my bed, couldn't get in the right state of mind to try and break down the Week 5 NFL card. I will say, sitting in a cab going from Midtown Manhattan to JFK, taking about 2.5 to 3 hours, my heart goes out to anybody living in major cities, whether it's D.C., whether it's Atlanta, Chicago, New York, or L.A., that has to sit on traffic on a regular basis. I forget the luxury we have out here in Vegas that it's not, I won't call it not a real city, but no real traffic patterns. And when you work from home, you don't have to deal with some of that nonsense. But cab driver and I got very close on a Friday afternoon, spending nearly 3 hours together talking about the day's events and trying to figure out where the Yankees had gone wrong in building this dynasty.
You do the podcast from your bed. That scares me a little bit. We're going to continue this. We're going further left from the Sicario review. The dating tips of New York City. You've kind of implemented your wisdom upon me about dating and doing the drinks first. So you're not really ponying up for this high-priced dinner. You do drinks first, and then you figure out if you want to go to dinner from there. Is that the move?
Yeah, I mean, dating philosophies are key, especially when time is at a premium. During the NFL season, you have, you know, you allocate about an hour, maybe 90 minutes. And on a first date, you can't go all out. You're not going to, you know, bust out a five-star dinner and spend $400 or $500 on a check. That's the rookie move. That's what I expect. 22-year-old Todd, who got taken to the cleaners by a cocktail waitress when he first started working at Caesars Entertainment. I let the girl pick the restaurant. I was new to Vegas. I almost cried at the table when I had to pick up a $400 cab. We don't do that anymore. You know, it's you start with drinks and you figure out if things are going to work and it's someone that you kind of want to spend quality time with. And in New York or even Vegas, you know, drinks are $18 a throw, so that can get to be a pricey night. You know, it doesn't allow you to buy into key numbers of threes and seven if that's where all your juice is going.
Professional move there. On to Sicario. I like this movie a lot. A little graphic, but I thought it was a great movie. Benicio absolutely stole the show. This is a must-watch on Tuesday night or Wednesday night of this week, if you can find the time.
Yeah, I think, and what's interesting about it, we were rating on a scale of 1 to 10. I think Colin Cowherd probably hit it best. He said, our listeners don't care. We're not movie critics. They don't know what the difference is between an 8 or a 6. We're going to go, yes, you should go watch it, or no, you shouldn't. This is definitely a yes. And for folks who are familiar with Benicio's catalog, it's definitely on the lines of The Usual Suspects, Snatch, Traffic, and Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Highly encourage people to go out there, check it out. As you mentioned, Payne, though, a little bit dark, a little bit macabre, and a little bit graphic, but a storyline that moved and some outstanding acting. So I think it is a worthwhile
break.
You
were still talking about the movie there when not knowing the difference between an 8 and a 6?
Well, I mean,
are we talking about movies or women now? I'm confused.
Because there's a big difference.
I was going to say movie. I do know the difference in the other category between an 8 and a 6, or at least I'd like to think. It all depends on how late in the evening, and if it's 3 o'clock when you're leaving Wet Republic, then you know all bets may be off. But I digress. I digress completely from where we should go to finish up this podcast to a very interesting game this evening taking place on the West Coast. The San Diego Superchargers, a 3.5-point favorite. Total on this game sits at 45.5 against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Michael Vick, extra time to prepare. Scobie no longer on the roster. But Payne, we've received some pretty conflicting reports from a lot of the guys we talked to about how this game has moved and where it's going to close.
Yeah, there's going to be two different opinions on this game from everything that I'm hearing. We saw some guys get out, lay 3, went to as high as 4. We saw some resistance there from a different batch of folks with a different mindset. So no clear-cut opinion on this game tonight. It will be interesting. Chargers get back some pieces. They get back DJ Fluker. It looks like they're going to get back starting center Chris Watt. So that's key. Left tackle, King Dunlop, he's still a long shot to go. Stevie Johnson's out, but I think he kind of replaced the tight end there. So you're going to get Gates back this week. I think that's a huge addition. Brandon Flowers looks like he passed the concussion protocol, so he's going to be out there. They get a linebacker back. So basically San Diego gets much healthier this week. For me, the key here is what can they do defensively and stop being Le'Veon Bell. You talked about Mike Vick probably only knowing 25% of the playbook last week. He's had some extra time to prep. What does he know this week? Does he know 40% of the playbook? I don't think anybody.
I was going to set the over-under at about 30. I was set the over-under at 38.5%.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think anybody thinks Mike Vick is digging into this playbook and he's any type of scholar. This is a guy who's got an elevator, 5 floors, and only makes it to the 3rd routinely. So I just don't know what you're going to get out of Vick at this point. So that's what would scare me there. But professionals laid through with San Diego, and another group took 4 with Pittsburgh. So that's kind of where we're at.
And you mentioned some of the defensive shortcomings we've seen from San Diego. This is a team allowing nearly 5 yards per carry, 7.5 yards per pass attempt. Clearly, this Chargers defense could use some reinforcements and getting key contributors back. Payne, for me, I'm of the same mindset. I don't plan to have a bet here, side or total. Could be a case of the game going over, but again, the Michael Vick factor will keep me off of that. I do think a prop bet that could be interesting, depending on where books elect to open it. Take a look at Keenan Allen. If you can find his receiving yards somewhat reasonable, I would say anything in the 70s. I think he can have an absolute field day against this Steelers secondary that really hasn't been tested the last couple weeks. They've been pretty fortunate against pop gun passing attacks, whether it's the 49ers, whether it's the Ravens minus Steve Smith and Michael Campanaro. I think Keenan Allen is your player to watch and will be poised for a big day. And more importantly, guys, you should have had a profitable Sunday, so there's no reason to try and go get involved here. We'll have plenty of college football starting Tuesday. You got 4 games Thursday, a big game Thursday night in the NFL that I'm sure we'll have a strong opinion on there. But, you know, no sense feeling compelled to bet Monday night if there's no value in the number.
Yeah, totally echo those sentiments. And for me, nothing at this point. It's very early in the morning. We're recording this right now. We're, 8:30 Vegas time. So we'll definitely have some more information continue to trickle in. And if anything, you know, worthwhile comes across, I'm sure we'll tweet it out to our loyal listeners.
The Colts just cut Josh Johnson. So they're down to 2 quarterbacks. What does that tell you guys?
Means Andrew Luck back in the saddle, baby.
That's the way it looks.
20 days off, 20 days of full-on rest. And I, not to bash the sportsbook, I think this is a good number here. The look-ahead was 5. You're now at 7.5 where this should have opened. And it'll be interesting to see where the market moves from here.
Yeah, I think you'll have an appetite for the dog a little bit. I just personally won't be able to do it. We'll see exactly how information continues to trickle in through the week. And Payne, you mentioned tweeting out some of those nuggets. Our listeners should be following you. If you're not, it's never too late to start. At Payne Insider on Twitter, you can follow me at Todd Furman. And the other voice that you hear in the background, you can follow him for erroneous Bears injury updates at SP Shoot, our producer, Sam Panayotovich. Find us at SoundCloud, iTunes, or toddstake.com. Payne, we did get a little bit off the rails today. Hopefully our listeners found it somewhat entertaining. I took shots at Sam. You took shots at me. We gave him a movie to try and break down the monotony of the otherwise mundane work week. But all in all, a lot of good information that hopefully will get folks to the window early with a couple of these market movers.
Yeah, it was a good week. Anytime you can throw a couple counter shots at you who've been jabbing me all season long through 5 weeks, I think I got to take them.
I mean, hey, if I open myself up to it, it's more than fair. But for producer Sam Panayotovic, working the board, Payne Insider, and Todd Furman, it's Bet the Board, Week 5, Monday Night Football Edition. Best of luck on whatever wagers you elect to place on tonight's Chargers-Steelers game. And hopefully we'll see you at the window.